When the world is crap and you've got the blues, just take a break from all that horrible news for something crazy, amazingly clever and never half-assed.
Except when it is.
Yes, it's the Randy Rainbow Podcast. This song is almost over, girl, so wipe your tears. You're in for a treat and feast your ears on this remarkable feat. Yes, it's a famous celebrity finally podcasting.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Randy Rainbow Podcast. I am your host, Lainey Kazan. I am in studio, and Rebecca, how you doing?
I'm great.
Really? What's so great about it?
It's November. We're going to have a holiday week.
This is my favorite time of year.
Yeah, I love wearing a jacket. I love scarves and sweaters. And I'm finally in New York where I can appreciate the cold weather.
Now, you recently moved from
Los Angeles, yeah.
And you were there how long?
11 years. 12 years. I was actually born in LA. I'm one of those ones.
So what is your relationship to seasons?
I have none.
Did you long for them when you did not have them?
You know, not really. I always like traveled to the snow, you know, in Tahoe. I grew up in Northern California. So, you know, there was some access, but I didn't know what I was missing. It's actually very interesting to hear New Yorkers specifically talk about how they relate to the seasons, like you're saying, where they associate different times in their life to the seasons. Like, oh yeah, that happened in a winter, whatever, however many years ago. Yeah. I never had that experience. Everything kind of just blends together.
Yes,
yeah, and I have a hard time with dates.
I don't like that. I think seasons are like the lovely, colorful little bookmarks of our lives. I just wrote that.
That's beautiful.
Good, right?
Yes.
Write that shit down.
And I actually really, I haven't been here that long. So I have not experienced the full seasons. I'm not a New Yorker. Let's be very clear. I've been here, you know, 6 months.
Yes, because we will snip you out and put you in your place.
I don't deny this. I don't try to pretend. But I do enjoy the shifts.
Technically, I'm a New Yorker. I was born on Long Island, but then we moved to South Florida. See, I still say Florida, when I was about 9 years old, and then stayed there for 11 years. So I went through a whole thing where I, you know, was homesick for 11 years and missed the seasons. So I do not take them for granted. That's why I love this time of year. What are you doing for Thanksgiving? I used to go home to Long Island a lot for the holidays, but now because I tour so much in the fall, we wrap and then I just have enough time to kind of hang out in the city. And so I usually spend it with friends. How about yourself?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Friendsgiving.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm doing a friend night. We're going to make food in our place. And
you're
going to
make
just
food
enjoy
for Thanksgiving?
Well, I'm not going to make food.
Oh, okay, good.
But my friends that are a little bit better in the kitchen are going to make food. I will bring the vodka.
Oh, yeah, girl. I don't make shit. I make, yeah, Tito's is my recipe.
I'll bring the drinks and I will help clean up. That is my contribution.
Oh, I don't even do that.
But I mean, I just love the friends element of it. I mean, I love my family. I just feel like there are other times that are better to spend with them than Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving for me personally feels like a friend holiday.
It is, because it's kind of that first real break that you get. Because let's be real, whether we love our families or not, it's a stressful thing to be with your family. Even like good stress, but it's stress.
How do you deal with that?
I just have not seen my mother in 27 years. I've not gone home for decades. No, this is a topic that comes up a lot lately, is how do you deal with political discussions around the Thanksgiving table that inevitably come up because...
Yeah, they always come up. Why?
Why? Because they can't contain themselves. This is what we have to talk about now. I luckily don't have, I don't think, any sort of like major MAGA people in my family. Plus, again, because of my job, I think people know better than to start pulling that Trump shit with me. So I don't have that thing of awkwardness around the Thanksgiving table. Do you have any of that?
I think there's a range in my family that some interactions are more comfortable than others. And yeah, I mean, stuff has come up on occasion. I don't have any like MAGA people. So it's kind of...
People are not like confrontational.
Yeah, my family is more like, we're all liberals, but let's argue the minutiae.
Right. Well, that's okay.
So we're going to like get at each other's throats for the things that we generally actually agree on, which is kind of a bigger commentary on how progressive liberals talk to each other. But for me, I think the key is giving yourself breaks and not getting involved in a conversation that you know you're not going to get anywhere.
Right.
Let me be clear. That doesn't mean don't have conversations, because that's one of the most important things is for us to be having the conversations. But yeah, I think you also have to protect your inner peace.
Absolutely. Healthy debate is wonderful Thanksgiving conversation, I think. But when it gets divisive, that's when you want to kind of leave it alone.
Yeah. And I think that you're allowed to take a moment for yourself when you need to. When it's getting heated, walk away for a second.
Also,
gather yourself.
I find drinking heavily works for me.
Oh, yeah. Forget what I just said. Drinking heavily.
I like to, listen, it's Thanksgiving, and that's always kind of a quick solution to any problem. I don't endorse heavily drinking, except I do. But all jokes, should we cut this out? No, leave it in. Fuck it. I want to be endorsed by Tito's or something so I can finally get some free shit. One of the nice compliments I get from my audience, especially when I'm doing my live shows, is they come up and say that I was somehow helpful in bringing their family together.
Aww.
They say my mother is a Republican and this one is a that and this one's a that, but I'm kind of a liberal, progressive kind of gay person. And watching your videos has kind of helped bring us together because we sing and we laugh. And that's really just a testament to the healing nature of musical comedy, I think, specifically. And that's, I think, one of the great things about the holidays is that they're always showing The Sound of Music and The Wizard of Oz and all that stuff. So maybe just turn on a musical.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Finding the things that you can relate to together.
Exactly.
The actual connection.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
So on today's episode of the podcast, one of my favorite people in the world, the fabulous Cheyenne Jackson. Just a little disclaimer here. Sadly, this interview was recorded earlier this year, and Cheyenne is on the marvelous hit sitcom Call Me Cat, where he has been working closely with the fabulous Leslie Jordan, who sadly left us recently, which was so sad. He was such a bright light on the planet and brought so much joy to people that, you know, it's not hyperbole, I think, to say that the world actually does feel a little dimmer with him not on it. So sending lots of love and condolences to his friends and family and all the people who loved him. So I just want to give you the heads up that that will not be discussed in this interview. Again, it was pre-recorded. And Cheyenne does speak lovingly about his dear friend. And I hope you enjoy the conversation as much as I did.
It's the Randy Rainbow Podcast. Let's answer the phone.
Pick up.
Hey, Randy, it's Matt. I thought it was so brave of you coming out on the first episode of your podcast. I never would have guessed that you were gay. My question is, how are you feeling about the second coming of Donald Jessica Trump and 4 more years of Make America Straight Again? Do you think you can live in Gilead, America, for another 4 years? Or maybe do you think you'll emigrate? Thanks.
Hi, Matt. Thank you for your call. It was incredibly brave of me to make that decision and come out on the first episode of my podcast. But listen, I'm trying to get subscribers and ratings. The second coming of Donald Jessica is horrifying, and it's here. It's actually happening, although I feel like he never really went away for there to be another coming. How will I deal with it? I just hope that we're all a little maybe smarter than we were the first time around, because it's coming. There's a hurricane a-coming, and her name is Donald Jessica. And I hope that maybe we just have better coping mechanisms to get through it. I hope that the media is smarter about their coverage, though I'm sure they won't be. I don't know. Hunker down. I mean, if you're a fan of mine, the good news is I suspect there will be no shortage of material ripe for parody over the next 2 years or so. So that's one way to look at it. And will I be immigrating? I don't know, Matt. You sound kind of cute with that accent. Where are you from?
Randy, this is Michelle in New Jersey. I've seen you perform live 3 times, and I love you. And I'm wondering how you psych yourself up and get yourself in the best possible mindset for going on stage in front of thousands of people. Love you. Hope to hear back from you. Bye.
Thank you for the question, Michelle. Well, you know, and thank you for coming to see me live 3 times. You're like a real official groupie. I'm a little nervous. But I am a classically trained performer, Michelle. So I like to do it the old-fashioned way. Hookers and blow. That's usually my regimen. Actually, I wish I had that much fun. It's not. I am very regimented about my pre-show routine. First of all, I have to get my cardio on. So I always jog before a show. And then I warm up. And then it's frankly a grande iced latte with almond milk. And that usually does the trick. And my audiences are so fun that they certainly help. Thanks again for coming.
Randy, this is Kelly Sheridan from Lewis, Delaware. Yes, queen. What are you afraid of, Randy? Spiders? Snakes? Spiders and snakes? Tell the world. We want to know what scares Randy Rainbow.
Hey, girl. Well, I don't like spiders and snakes. Insects in general are not my friend. If you want to talk about like insects that scare, I had bed bugs 12 years ago. Everyone in the studio is going, no, don't even go there, girl. Do not talk about this. I know, because I have PTSD from that experience. I had them in my little studio apartment that I was in at the time. And the end of the story is I moved. They won. That's how it ended. I said, you guys take the place. I can't anymore. So I will always have some sort of fear of bed bugs. And yeah, that really fucked me up. But I would say that generally speaking, my fears are much deeper and darker and more internal, like, you know, failure and intimacy. But yeah, snakes and spiders aren't cute either. Hey, if you want to leave me a message and ask me a question or compliment me or ask me something about you or your life, you can go to the show notes, click the link, and talk to me.
It's the Randy Rainbow Podcast.
And now a love letter to my cat from the road. Dated September 19th, the year of our Lord, 2022. Tippy, as you read this letter, please think of me doing an old-timey Southern accent, as I find letters back then were just so much more poetic and romantic. My dearest Tippitarius, I hope this letter finds you well and in good health. Though my travels are not without strain, my super successful jaw-dropping live show, The Pink Glasses Toa, tickets available now on randyrainbow.com, has been a source of joy to both myself and audiences nationwide. I'm often stunned at the beauty and majesty this country has to offer, matched only by the spirit of the many fans I've had the honor of meeting on my journey. How often we forget how blessed we all are. But then, once I had to stop in Alabama, so there was that. Tippy, did you know there's a grocery store called Piggly Wiggly? It's a real thing. I had thought it was something made up, like Narnia or Tiffany Trump. Oh, the strange and curious things I've observed on my travels, Tippitarius. People who wear their socks whilst wearing their sandals, and often rest their Oakley sunglasses upon the back of their large heads. Strange men who wear the sporting jersey of another person for which they are not a part of the team. And did you know in other parts of the country, they use their gym steam rooms for relaxation and not group sex? Oh, Tippy, how I long to be in our soft bed once more, painting our nails and watching Joan Crawford movies like civilized girls in our quaint and humble little Manhattan abode. But my commitment to my fans and craft has not faltered. It will not. For these feet shall boots the house down, mama. Yes, for God is good. And should tickets still be available, again at randyrainbow.com, I hope they do find their way to my beautiful and supportive fans. Keep our bed warm, Tippy, for I shall return to you soon, my love. Warmest regards, Randy.
That was really a kick, but enough of that skit. Time to drop all the shit now. So let's cut the shit. I think I'm fabulous, Kiki. With someone I love would be bad.
Yes, it is. It's time for a guest.
Beast. still my beating heart. Today's guest is not only a famous and successful Broadway, film, and television actor, he's an advocate, a producer, and most importantly, a proud and wonderful father and husband. And if that's not enough showing off, he's also the kind of strikingly handsome that makes you question why God hates the rest of us. Welcome to the show, the incomparable Cheyenne Jackson.
Hi, Ran.
How you doing, honey?
I'm good. How are you?
You're so good.
You're causing quite a stir again.
What did I do this time? You mean my friend Lauren Boebert and I?
Mm-hmm.
Making headlines?
Yeah, she's a sweetie.
Can you believe that shit? I'd love her. Love her work. Yeah, isn't that fun? Did you see? She called me. She, like, keep my wife's name out your motherfucking mouth. That was crazy. But hey, it was a good press day for me, so I'll take it.
Perfect. Anything?
Anything for a headline. So, Shai, did you see what I'm wearing? For the home listeners, I've got Cheyenne Jackson all over my tits.
Oh, yes. You can thank my husband for that. He owns a branding and marketing company, and he works with all the movie studios and television studios. And he's like, babe, let me make you some shirts. I'm like, okay.
They're good. Well, it's good. It's a quality merch. So Jason does a good job.
Yeah, he does the tack sleeves already. He has it all. Yeah, it's ready.
I was going to say the sleeves are, yeah, it's gay ready.
Yes.
I didn't even have to roll a thing. But it came with the announcement and in celebration of your new single, which I just listened to. And it's so good. It's legit good.
Thanks.
Celebrate Your Face. It's the song of my summer. And it has a nice story behind it. What inspired it?
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, like I said in my little note to you, I'm not trying to be a 46-year-old pop star, but I am a songwriter and I've written songs for a long time. And I wrote this several years ago for somebody in my family who suffers from depression. And I really wanted her to see how beautiful she is, how important she is to all of us. But I never did anything with it. I just kind of had it, let it sit with so many songs that you write. And then on the season of Call Me Cat, on the second season, my character Max is, they keep having him write music and it's kind of a new direction for the character. So they would write songs for me and I would kind of have notes and then it kind of ended up being this big collaboration. And then towards the end, I was just pitching songs that I've already written or songs that I'd like to write. And this song came, I remember, oh shit, I have this great song that I think would be perfect for me to write for Mayim's character. So I pitched it to the producers and they were like, oh, that's so great. So on the show, it's a very acoustic, pared down version. And then when I was shooting it, I just thought, this song is so, I love the hook. It's super catchy. It's really sweet. I love the story. Let me just do like a full production of it. Like get my Duran Duran never ending story vibes on. And yeah, so that's
it. It's got that 80s kind of thing, which is before my time, but I assume that that's
mine
what
too.
It's a callback to. Yeah, I'm 26. Yeah, but it's so fun.
Oh, thank you.
And that's so nice, you know, because I, of course, relate everything back to me because I'm a narcissist. So I was thinking, but you know, I'm traveling with my pink glasses tour, and that's sort of the metaphor that I give. Those is really kind of, you know, find your joy, find your celebration in life.
Mm-hmm.
And other than your beautiful family, of course, is the right answer. But what through your, you know, because people look at Cheyenne Jackson, and you're gorgeous and talented and successful. I know what it's like. And they probably think you haven't a care in the world. And have you ever struggled with, you know, I'm sure you have, some form of depression or anxiety? Let's start with a real positive note. But, you know, identity struggles and things like that.
My whole life has been a struggle.
Yeah.
I mean, every single day, I'm just trying to stay above the fray, keep my family together, keep my kids sane, keep everybody on track, keep my career going, keep my body how it needs to be for me to feel good on TV, all of the things. No, my God, I've suffered my first really bout with depression, I would say probably about 19. I came out at 19. I'm from a very small town in northern Idaho, lived out in the woods. I had no running water. We had an outhouse, you know, very, very little house on the prairie without the prairie. And growing up that different in a town like that, which was very Republican, very white, 30 miles from the Aryan Nation compound, being a queer kid who just always felt different, always felt bigger than everybody else. I always was a head taller than everyone else. So I had a lot of body stuff that I had to really deal with as I got older. And yeah, and then once I got to New York at 27, started working, anxiety really, really started to rear its head. And a lot of it was social, because I just never felt, I always felt so different in my little town that, you know, you'd be doing your show on Broadway and then afterwards you guys go out. And I just always felt uncomfortable in my skin. So I would use alcohol to numb it and feel like, oh, there I am. Oh, now I can talk to people. And it just got to a place where it wasn't good for me anymore. It wasn't living my best life. So yeah, I've always struggled with anxiety and some form of a little bit of depression, but who hasn't in some fashion? And what we've all been through collectively these last 3 years, Jesus.
If you're not depressed, there's something wrong with you. You're doing it.
It's just day after day. We have to protect our hearts and protect what we put in our brains and how much news we watch or don't watch. And I mean, you know.
It's horrible. I'm depressed, right? I'm depressed constantly. But we, you know, we do turn it into art, and thankfully,
yes,
we find ways to channel it so that we can cope with it. I mean, that's why I do what I do. People say, thanks for helping me through. Well, you're welcome, but I'm frankly doing it to maintain my own sanity.
Exactly.
And so art has really been a thing that helped me. And you, I mean, we'll get to the new stuff because there's lots of things going on with you. I have whole notes. But when you came to New York at 27, did you explode onto the scene with this Broadway career that you wound up with? Or how long did that take?
I mean, for me, it was an explosion. I didn't go to college. I started late for so many years in Seattle. Everyone was always saying, you should move to New York. You really have something. But, you know, I'd never taken a dance class or an acting class. And I just thought, how am I going to compete with these guys right out of Juilliard? And, you know, but two things happened. We had a death in our family, my brother's daughter, and 9/11. And both of those situations were so heartbreaking and so just showing you how quickly life is going by. And I didn't want to be an old man like thinking, why didn't I try? Why didn't I just go? So 6 months after 9/11, I moved to New York. I didn't have an agent. I didn't have pictures, but I had a lot of confidence. I realized now that I was kind of manifesting before I even knew what that was. I was like the musical theater star in Seattle. I had done all the shows at the Fifth Avenue Theater and the Village Theater in Issaquah, Washington. And you know, I had a lot of confidence. I knew what I could do and I knew what my strengths were. And the first thing I got was Thoroughly Modern Millie. It was the first audition I went on. And it was 3 weeks after being in New York. But Randy, it was one of those things where you like, I just knew it was mine because they needed somebody who could understudy Mark Kudish, who was a baritone, and also understudy Gavin, who was a tenor. I've always been able to sing really high and really low. They needed someone who looked kind of both ages. That's me. I've always looked kind of old and kind of young. I mean, when I was 16, I auditioned for a community theater production of Sound of Music and for Rolf. And they were like, oh, are you here for the captain? Motherfucker. So
Maria,
obviously. And I got into that and then really just hit the ground running. And so then started taking classes and then started learning everything I could. And here I am doing scenes with Sutton Foster. Both the leads were out doing other projects pretty much right away. So within about 6 weeks of being in the show, I was doing either one of the roles for like months at a time.
Oh, wow.
And then I started doing workshops and I did the workshop of Altar Boys and then created that. And then, yeah, I just kind of started going from there. And then soon after that was Aida and then All Shook Up, I would say it was probably my big break.
Yeah, that was the big break.
Yeah.
But that's funny. You would say you really kind of started getting your education after your career really took off out of necessity.
I had the raw talent. I had the vocal ability. I knew how to act, but I didn't have the technical skills and I was just a professional faker. So, and I've always been somebody who loves to watch and loves to learn. I'm an observer. And so even back in the day when I was in the chorus of Seven Brides for Seven Brothers or something, I would be watching everybody on stage. When everybody else was in the dressing rooms fucking around, I would be watching and learning from the leads. And just, that was kind of my school.
Yeah, I relate to that. Yeah. I have no formal training either. I really am just a mimic of everything that I see. I'm a sponge of just everything. There's a lot of shit. Every performance I've ever seen is stuck somewhere in there.
Same.
And I find myself calling things up that I didn't even know I remembered.
Uh-huh. Same. And that's, I think everybody does. We all steal from each other. We're all like, tick, 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 little bits.
Yeah.
And yeah. Yeah. So
Meryl Streep said once that her secret, you probably have heard this, is that she steals, but she steals mostly from men. Like,
ooh,
blatantly rips off men. And then no one is, you know, everyone's none the wiser because they don't, you don't think of it. So I find myself constantly like, you know, mimicking Streisand and Bernadette Peters. And I'm like, no one would think like, oh, that, because that's kind of an unlikely source of inspiration, I guess.
I love it.
Did you grow up with musical theater in your house?
I found musical theater through yard sales. I found I would just go and spend days like going through people's junk. and I found these tapes, and I found the tape of Annie, and I found the tape of 42nd Street. And I remember I thought Broadway was like one theater called Broadway. And right. I thought, and everybody's like, you got to go to Broadway. And yeah, so it was the first time I ever knew that that was actually a thing that could be your job. I remember I was 13 years old. I was in eighth grade, and our French teacher, Mrs. Henry, she was known as the culture lady because she had been to Seattle.
Wow.
It makes sense. And she said, yeah, one day she came into class and she's like, you guys, we're all going to Spokane, Washington, and you're all going to see Les Miserables. French teacher, by the way. And so we were like, yes. And we had to sign the parent teacher consent forms because there were prostitutes in the show. And we felt so naughty. And I remember sitting in the Spokane Opera House, and it started, you know, and I just remember like the chills on my body. And then the people came out and they had the smears of dirt on their faces and they were marching. And I was just like, what is happening?
Yeah.
I could not believe that, you know, this was their job, and they got to travel around and sing this amazing stuff. And that was it. That was my golden fleece.
Yeah. So you did, you manifested it. I think when you love something that deeply and when it affects you in that way, you know, there's no two ways about it. You just wind up doing it somehow.
Yep.
I mean, you've had such a fabulously varied, illustrious Broadway career. Is there a role that's eluded you to date? Is there a dream role that we've yet to see you play? Mama Rose, perhaps?
Mama Rose. Well, Gypsy is maybe my all-time favorite musical.
Have you ever been in it?
I did.
Tulsa.
I did it in...
I would hope you'd be Tulsa at some point.
No, I couldn't dance like that.
Oh.
But I was one of the boys. We did it in the Coeur d'Alene Summer Theater in Idaho, and Ellen Travolta was Mama Rose. She was great. And John Travolta came. I remember it was very exciting.
That's the sister of John?
His sister, yeah.
Oh. God.
Yeah.
Sorry,
she looks a lot like Lily Tomlin.
Okay.
Yeah, no, she's wonderful. She was on Happy Days. And anyway, yeah, I was in the ensemble Just one of the Broadway, the little boys. And let's see. I mean, there's a few things that I wanted so bad, but I didn't get. I was in the final mix for the guys for Light in the Piazza. I remember that was such a heartbreaker. And I was in Adam Gettle's loft, and I'd been working on the dialect and working on the text, and I sang Love to Me, and it was done. And I was like, oh, I totally fucking got this part. This is amazing. I'm so excited. And then as I walk out, and it's one of those giant, you know, fancy lofts where it like takes the whole floor, a private elevator, and off comes Matt Morrison. Who was a buddy of mine. But then they like did like a bro handshake, and I was like, oh, she's a fucking proper chuck. So that was one.
So you didn't get that one.
Didn't get that one.
Any other ones that you any other Matt Morrison fucking people you want to call out?
What else did I not get? Oh, I had a horrible audition for Spamalot. It's just one of those auditions where you don't prepare enough. And I think I was just like caught up and I thought, oh, I think I know this material enough. And I was probably too cocky or something, but I remember going in and it was so legit and everybody was, it was like the final. And I just absolutely took a dump on the floor. It was terrible. Probably the worst audition I've ever had was for Hugh Jackman's Standby for Boy from Oz. And my audition, I sang my first song and then they said, do you have anything else from your book? And I hadn't looked in that freaking book in years. And I showed them the book and one of them was Being Alive. And they're like, try Being Alive. So I was like, oh, God, I don't know. Okay. So I start, somebody. Oh, just a sec. Sorry. Let me start again. So I go back. It's not going well. Somebody. Again, fully go up. I basically want to just like back out of the room.
You couldn't remember the lyric? Is that what's happening?
Couldn't remember the lyric. Oh, and then finally, the third time, I was like, somebody, again. And they all went, hold me too close. unison sang it. Yeah, it was not my best.
That's horrifying. Yeah. Did you ever work with Sondheim on anything?
Never personally. We did Into the Woods 2 summers ago at the Hollywood Bowl. Sutton Foster and Patina Miller and Sierra. And me, but no, and I love Sondheim and yeah, I wish that I had met him a few times at social things and in New York, but no, I never got to work with him like actively.
You know what I'm thinking of? Didn't you once say that you were a fairy tale theater person?
Yes.
Cause yes. Look what's on my wall behind me. I just connected. God. I have all the posters framed. Was that a big thing for you as a child?
Yes.
I feel like that is a bonding thing for me and any 80s kid.
Anybody that knows fairy tale theater, oh my God, I loved fairy tale theater. It's something that bonded me and my sister forever and ever. We can still quote them.
Me
and
too. Some of,
they're all so bizarre and just off. And the lighting, I remember Jenna Rollins as the witch in Rapunzel. And oh, who is Snow White? Elizabeth McGovern and
Malcolm McDowell in Little Red Riding Hood for me was I learned so much about comedy through watching those and timing. I mean, the performances, well, you're saying the names of the people who participated in this, it was A-list people.
So, and I love how Shelley Duvall always was like, she just popped herself right in the lead. She's like, I'm going to play Rapunzel.
Good for her. God bless her.
And Jeff Bridges. Oh my God. He was so, I remember that. And remember the animated tears that came down?
Yes.
When he was crying.
That was one
Robin Williams as the Frog Prince.
Yes.
Yes. Those were amazing. And you could tell she just asked all of her buddies to come on and do this for a day on a soundstage with lots of dry ice and fog on the ground.
Oh, it was so cheesy, but it was so beautifully produced. And, and again, the performances are like, I love that you love that.
Absolutely.
All right, well, let's talk about this Masked Singer thing. Now, full disclosure, I still don't know what the hell that show is about. I have not taken the time to educate myself. I'm a Cheyenne Jackson fan. So I saw you were on it. I watched. You were fabulous. But I still don't know what the hell is going on with that show. So what was the experience like for you? How did they contact you? What happened?
It's a definitely a bizarre kind of mushroom trippy type show to watch. You just don't know what the hell you're watching.
It's like an episode of Fairy Tale Theater, frankly.
Yes, for reals, but without Shelley Duvall. I it was never really on my radar, but I knew what it was. I'd had friends do it before, and then I got a call that said, "Would you be interested in being on The Masked Singer this year?" I said, I don't think I can because I'm in the middle of shooting, but it's on Fox and my show's on Fox. And so they said, we'll obviously work it out. I said, give me a day to think about it just because there's a lot to digest. Singing on a reality show, television show in a mask. So the whole construct is it's 15 celebrities and they're under masks and they sing. And then there's a panel of judges and the judges are trying to guess who it is. Even if they guess you, you still don't get kicked off. There's a vote at the end of every performance and the studio audience votes. And then it gets whittled down. And singing is my first love. Singing is what really propelled me eventually out of that little town in Idaho and made me, you know, really come into my own as a person, as an artist. and got me to Broadway and started my whole track, right? But in the last several years, music has really taken a back seat because of television. So, I mean, I do concert work here and there, but it's really, most people don't know me as a singer. It drives my mother insane. Isn't
that funny?
You know, yeah, it's your main thing. Yeah. So,
my mom too. Any compliment on the singing? That's the only thing that matters.
Of course, yeah. You sounded so good, Randy. Yeah. So that was the main thing. I thought, you know what? I'm going to do this. I think this would be really fun to kind of foster my love of singing, fall back in love with live performing, remind people or teach people if they don't know that I sing. But really, I thought it would be almost like an existential experiment of sorts. What I mean is, so many people put their own preconceived notions of who you are on you, right? Like even in your intro, you talked about Cheyenne and your career and your handsome face and whatever. And I welcome and love all of that. But I thought, what would it be like to not have anybody see my face and not have anybody look at my body and have it, the only way I can connect with people is through the sounds I'm making and the lyrics that I'm connecting with, hopefully through whatever mask they give me. So I thought that would be a really interesting experiment. And then I met with them and talked about what I was going to do. I had ideas of what mask I wanted, but then they really pitched me this frog prince and they turned the laptop dramatically around and showed me, and he was so grand. And I decided to give him this fun backstory, just the actor in me. I wanted this whole through line. And it ended up being really, really fun. Really hard,
yeah.
Way harder than I thought, because holding a mask on your head while you're trying to sing, yeah, these muscles are supposed to be relaxed, as you know.
Right.
And if these muscles are trying to hold a 30-pound mask on your head, it's terrible. So I had a friend who did it before, and I was told to, I got a big, heavy motorcycle helmet, and I walked on my treadmill and sang like a high incline and just strengthened the muscles around my neck and hoping that would help. I don't know, maybe it did. But my kids loved it, and it was really fun. And as I started progressed in it, because we don't know anything, we don't know anybody who else is in it. I have a very good musical ear. So a couple of times I heard voices through the wall rehearsing. I'm like, that has to be En Vogue. My husband was there with me, and I'm like, that's En Vogue, right? It was. But no, nobody told me shit. And I tried desperately to find out who people were. But my main thing about it, and this is I can wrap it up with this. There aren't any real secrets anymore on shows. Everything is spoiled. I remember on American Horror Story, we'd have a great secret set. And then somebody, like a background artist, would come on for the day and then take a picture of the set and then post it and then just blow the secret. The Masked Singer, love it or hate it, it's secret. You don't know. And I would do Call Me Cat all day long. And then at night I would go and drive to this parking lot. And then this SUV would drive up and these men would get out very eyes wide shut. And they would hand me this cloak and hand me this mask and say, hello, Prince. And then I would get in the car and you're not allowed to talk and you have to cover your hands. So nobody sees any skin to see what color you are. And I thought, this is kind of fun. How fun to do this and actually have nobody know who you are. So it was a good experience. And then I made it to the finale.
That's fabulous. Well, you were great on it.
Yeah.
I'll watch it again now because I enjoyed you on it. And wasn't Leslie Jordan, was he a guest judge?
Yes.
And was that a secret you had to keep as well?
Yes. And that's hard because Leslie he's my girl.
Oh my God,
and
I love him.
The best. And we were working that day and he came home. He came to set and he's like, Cheyenne, I just did Masked Singer and you have got to do it. They would love you. And I was like, I just wanted to be like, I'm on it right now.
My God.
I couldn't tell him. So I did tell him that he's like, I'm going to kill you.
Oh, that's a very good impression of Leslie Jordan, by the way.
Well, I'll work with him all day.
Oh my God. Well, you do on this fabulous Call Me Cat, which was just renewed for season 3.
Mm-hmm.
Mazel tov.
Mm-hmm.
That's not an easy thing to find a successful sitcom situation these days. You must be doing something right.
It is not easy. And we are. And thank you for that. Yeah, I have My kids are 5 and a half, and I've been actively looking for something to keep me close to home. And the classic situation comedy hour setup is super ideal for a dad of little kids. I think in 2 years, I missed maybe 2 bedtimes. So it's been really, as far as schedule, it's been amazing. But honestly, I really love the medium because of my theater. It's very presentational, and I really had to learn quickly the 5-camera setup. You know, it's so fast. You learn so much material. You do an episode a week, and it's constantly changing and moving. And there are incredible comedians on that show. So yeah, it's been really, really exciting, fulfilling. I know everybody talks about like, oh, our cast is so close and we're like a family, but we literally started this in the middle of the pandemic, and we had to meet over Zoom. We've never had a studio audience. It's just us and our producers on the soundstage, fully masked up until right before action. So the amount of trust and the amount of bonding that the 6 of us have had, it's pretty remarkable. And slowly but surely, we've found our footing, deepened these characters. And it's such a wonderful thing that we're getting another chance to do it again, because Swoosie Kurtz.
Yeah, you got some cast that you're working with. I mean,
oh my God,
these are not
Leslie Jordan.
Newcomers.
No, it's incredible. And Mayim has become such a great friend in real life. And she's amazing. She can do it all.
Is Mayim a musical person? I think that she's responded to a few of my videos. I feel like I'm like, she's a musical person.
Yeah. She's very musical. Remember her? She was little Bette Midler
in
Beaches.
Yeah, obviously.
But she sings, she dances, she writes. She's incredible at harmony. She speaks Yiddish. She's ambidextrous. She plays the harp. She's good at all of it.
Tired.
And she's also a great friend and a great producer and an incredible physical comedian. And I'm learning so much from watching her. I remember talking to Sean Hayes. We did Damn Yankees in New York.
Which
and
I saw.
I did one episode of Will and Grace. And he just would always say, you have to just go for it. You got to just like, if you're taking it, a knee to the face in a scene, you got to just yank your head back so hard. You'd be sore the next day. I just love his commitment. And Mayim does the exact same thing. It's such abandon. And I've always been kind of a controlled person within my lane. I feel confident, but like this is really making me branch out and embrace my silly side and embrace, you know, the situations they put us in. So, and it's growing everywhere I'm going now. People are talking about it. It's really, really, my kids love
it.
Yeah,
it's a great show. Your kids do love it because, you know, you do a lot of family friendly stuff as of late too, Descendants and things like that. So I was going to ask, your kids are fans? Because sometimes, you know, parents, I mean, for me, the only reason I have kids is so they'll tell you how great you are. But a lot of people are like, they don't like daddy on TV.
I think they'll grow out of it. But right now, they think it's incredible that I'm Hades in Descendants and that I'm the frog on Masked Singer. When people recognize me from Call Me Cat, my son will be like, he's Max, like really loud. And no, they love it. They love it. And I think my son's probably going to be an actor. He's really good at it and he really wants to. I just want him to be a kid though. So we're having that conversation now. But
I was just talking to Megan Hilty about this. I mean, it sounds to me like you're nurturing without being aggressive about pushing it.
I'm not taking him on auditions. No. It's important for me for them to be kids and to be dirty. And I grew up out in the woods, filthy. And it's important for kids to have all that. Yes, we live in Hollywood. Yes, my kids are adorable. Yes, they're hilarious, but they can do school plays. They can do things. And then, you know, maybe when they're like 11, 12 or something, they still want to do it. I would support that. But like I've been approached about the kids like modeling or something like that. And that's not interesting to me. I want them to.
That's so nice. Well, I have to say, it's really nice to see your family, you know, as such a beautiful example of what a modern family looks like in the world today. And it's a beautiful
thing.
Thank you. You're such a good dad. I wish you were mine. But that's another story. Never mind. Anyway, what's coming up? A movie with Cate Blanchett. Is this correct?
Yes.
The hell?
That, I know. Exactly.
Have you shot this already?
Yeah, we shot it already. It's based on a video game. It's called Borderlands. Eli Roth directed. Yeah. And it was wild, wild. All of my little fantasies coming true. We shot it in Hungary last summer. And yeah, it was Jack Black and Kevin Hart and Jamie Lee Curtis, who is now a really close friend. She's Jamie is maybe the best human that you will ever meet.
I believe that.
Let me tell you this. I get to Budapest and I get to my hotel room and there are, I kid you not, 15 children's books waiting for me. She's a very accomplished children's book author. And I thought, oh my God, Jamie Lee like schlepped her books here for me. Not only did she bring children's books for my kids, she personalized each one. And not just like love Jamie, like there's a book that says like my mommy and daddy hung the moon. She went through and changed everything to my dad and daddy.
Oh my God.
Hung the moon.
I'll cry. This is the kind right of person she is. Podcast.
She is incredible. And anyway, so one of my favorite things about it was, yes, and Kate Blanchett. I was like, they said, I got to set one day and Eli Roth was like, do you want to meet Kate? I'm like, uh-huh. So I was just not dissimilar to when I first met Lady Gaga. It's just like, there are certain people that you're just like, holy fuck, it's happening. Here we go. And I walked onto this big, you know, it's a fantasy sequence. So she's, you know, has like her, this hair and this incredible outfit. And she's like spinning her gun like a gunslinger. And she was, oh my God. Her skin and her eyes and her whole demeanor and everything just like froze for a second. She's like, hi, nice to meet you.
Oh my God. I love her.
Yeah. And then I found myself running through the salt mines, you know, with the pretend alien blaster with these incredible people. And yeah, it was wild.
That must have been fun.
Yeah. So, so fun. Yeah. And then just season three of Call Me Cap. And I'm producing now. My husband and I started a production company this last year. We have about 4 or 5 things cooking. But the first thing we did is this short film that just got into a bunch of festivals. So it's called Brutal. It's basically Veep meets like set in a cable news network. And I got all my funny friends to do it. And so that's going to debut at Frameline in San Francisco. And so, yeah, I have a couple of those things. But really, I'm just being a soccer dad, a gymnastics dad. And I love it.
That's fabulous. Love it. Well, if you have a part for me, don't ever hesitate to pick up the phone.
Shine. What did I just see you? And I will not forget that. What did I just see you? And you were so good. It was you were at a wedding.
Oh, Better Things.
Better Things.
Yeah.
Yes.
Singing that
Do you
song.
Know Pamela? That was amazing.
Thank you. Pamela Adlon, I had not met. We've since become dear friends. She's like my Jamie Lee Curtis, if you will.
Oh. I could see
but
that.
She called me up and she said that she wrote this thing for me. And it was a horrible time to do it. I had just wrapped my tour for the year. I just wanted to go home. But
sure.
She pitched it. And it's, you know, I'm not going to turn that down. And I'm so glad I did. It was one of the best experiences I ever had.
You were so great in it. It was really great to see you do scene work. You've created such a mark for yourself in the world in which you've created. But like, it was nice to see you like, do some great acting and actually have these. I thought it was awesome.
Thanks, Shai. Yeah. Well, I love you and I adore you and I name drop you in my new book, best-selling memoir, now available wherever books are sold, because I talk about some of the first people to ever really call me out. And you were one of those people when I was pipsqueak to say, aren't you that guy? And we love you. And that, I don't have to tell you for... When people who you idolize and who are ahead of you in the game reach back and give you the high sign, that means a lot. It, you know, puts a lot of fuel in your tank. So I'm always so grateful to you.
My pleasure. Listen, I was trying to think on the way here, I was trying to think of when I first met you or was aware of you, but I think I've just always, you're like Cher. I've always known
that's
about
what
Randy
I say
Rainbow.
On my resume. That's what it says.
It is?
Yeah. Like Cher. That's it.
Oh. I just like Cher. Yeah, I've always known who you were. And if you've always just been kind of in the zeitgeist. And just in the last several years, have you like done your thing? But like, who is the person that has, you talk about like Pamela reaching out. I'm sure do people all the time, like slide into your DMs and you're like, holy fuck, they watch my shit?
Oh, it's nuts. I mean, the most surprising thing, I guess, is the politicians and the news, you know, the serious journalist people, like the Jake Tappers, who will reach out. And I'm like, really? cool. But that, but you don't expect that. I expect, like, you know, because it started with the gays, with the Broadway people. And then when the serious CNN people started sliding in.
Yeah.
That was always the most interesting.
How amazing did it feel when Sondheim talked about your lyrics and you as a lyricist? Because I've always said that about you. Like, yes, people can do parody. Yes, people, but your lyrics are so unbelievably great and so difficult to do. I know. I write music and I know how hard it is.
Yeah.
How great did that feel to get from the king?
I mean, I don't have to tell you. I can't feel it. You, certain things are too big for you to feel is what I've learned on this journey. I'm sure you can relate to that. And you go, and you sit with it for a minute and you go, that just happened. What does that feel like? And it's too big. I can't feel it. I'm numb.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, it's amazing. I guess, you know, as years go by, you look back and you appreciate these things in hindsight.
I have a couple more questions for you.
Oh, please. I have nowhere to be.
Because I wonder, because of the politics and the buttons that you push, you just must get, because I get death threats now and then, but you just must get it in at a whole different level.
Well, I mean, it's certainly worse now. I think it's worse for everybody now. I think the pandemic really, you know, created this new, I mean, people make it their full-time jobs to troll and to hate you. What are people threatening you about? What are you doing that's so hard?
Oh, it's always just like gay stuff. It's just always, you know, the most base, you know.
Really? See, I don't get that much. It's surprising to me that I also don't check my comments frequently because I'm not a fucking lunatic.
That is key. That's a key.
But yeah, I'm certainly more so than ever. But all these years, I should shut my mouth, you know, knock on whatever. But I really never got like the MAGA people after me. I mean, this Lauren Boebert thing, you know, she'd called me out. So maybe this is the dawn of a new kind of chapter of my career. It's my first Twitter feud with an actual congresswoman, if that's what we're calling her.
Oh, Jesus.
But I'm just trying to have a good time, Shai.
I mean, it's incredible.
Thanks,
I mean,
honey.
You must feel, what kind of pressure do you feel, or do you feel pressure to top yourself? Or is it just a matter of like, this is what I'm going to talk about now, and this is a new thing? Because you've set the bar so high, but you run the gamut in terms of the things you cover.
Yeah, I try not to think too much about it. I mean, I feel now that we're post-Trump, I've sort of feel less pressure. Because in those days, there was every day was a specific word or a catchphrase or a headline that you had to get out by noon the next day or the whole thing would change.
Or it was over.
Now things are, you know, these topics are, there's still plenty to cover, but they're a little more ever topical. So I can take my time. I'm enjoying my artistic process a little bit more. You know, I'm producing the music for the videos a little, you know, grander on a bigger scale. And so that's more fun for me. So I'm having more fun doing it.
That's great.
And just trying to do it whenever it strikes me. Because, you know, if you're not inspired, then it's bullshit, you know?
Absolutely. And you can always tell.
Yeah. So I think that's the secret to my success, if I have any. But thank you, Shai. I don't want to keep you. I could talk to you all goddamn day.
Thank you for having me.
I'd love to be with you in person one of these days. You, me, and Jason, we should have dinner sometime.
I would love that. Yeah, right. I'm off to, have to drop something for the kids. The kids have a performance at school.
Oh, what are they doing?
They're singing Taylor Swift's Shake It Off. With choreography. And then they were singing, I'm still standing better than I ever did. It's the cutest thing. And my daughter, she's like, looking like a true survivor. Oh, she like has all the moves. And you try to not be Mama Rose in the back, sing out. But like, what are you going to do?
I got to say, they are really cute. They are really, really cute. It's not in your imagination.
Thank you.
They really are adorable. All right, Shai. I love you very much. Thanks for doing
this. Love you too.
All right.
Continued success.
You too, babe. Talk to you soon. Thank you to everyone who is tuning in each week. Thank you for listening, subscribing, and rating the show. I'm so excited to hear that you're liking it. I appreciate you all. Heads up, I will not be releasing a new episode next week because it's Thanksgiving Day. So please enjoy the holiday however you choose. And I look forward to connecting with you on December 1st. I'm so grateful for you all. Bye.
And now the show is over, girl. So thanks for listening. It's been a vibe. And damn it, don't you dare forget to subscribe. I promise next week will be 10 times better than you. perfect when it's not. He's a daddy, a star. It's lights, camera, action. Give it up for my fabulous friend, Cheyenne Jackson.
And that's the last word.